Tian Edwards, and this is Why Goddess, Women's Power in Goddess Societies. As definitely all of you know, I'm working on a paper for my senior thesis, my last requirement for graduation, and I've decided to look at women and how their role in a society affects the image of the deity. Specifically when that deity is female. First a brief outline. I'm going to look at the fictional case of a society when there are only women, so there are no men. Obviously, a society like this can't exist, but it allows you to look at why a society picks an image without dealing with the effects of where does the other gender in the rankings. Then look at matriarchal societies, where the women are the main power, just as this is mainly considered, especially until recently, a patriarchal society. Then the main power of goddess societies held by women is that of childbirth, a function that men cannot do, and in fact was considered to belong only to women. A male's role was in general not understood, and that was a major form of power for women. Women also then had power, part as because of that, in the economic, political, and religious spheres of their world. They also seem to have had a great deal to do with the invention of tools and early development of society, mainly prompted by the needs placed on them by children, that men did not have to worry about where their next meal was coming from to the extent that a mother did with her child. And then I'm going to look at one that maybe would be more interesting to the community, which is the Mary phenomenon. Mary is, in fact, when you examine her, incredible parallel with the goddess. And if with my thesis, which is if women were a power in a society, that society's deity would be considered female, how do you allow for Mary? That even at women's lowest points, Mary was still a main figure of the church. And then I'll look briefly at modern society with the comeback of women's power and hopefully an evening out of a balance between men and women's power and change in the way we look at God. I will talk until I either run out of things to say or we reach a time limit. Feel free to interrupt and ask questions, and I'll open up for conversation in about 25 minutes, depending on where I am in my thing. At that time, even if I'm not done, I'll see if people want to go on to discussions or I can continue giving information. First of all, in this paper, I'm making a number of assumptions that need to be laid out in the beginning. First of all, I'm assuming the existence of goddess societies. This is greatly debated today. There is proof that there are goddess societies, but there isn't a lot. And in fact, there's proof that at the same time period, there were god societies. So the burden of proof has been laid on people to prove that there were goddess societies, mainly because we're in a god society today. So obviously there's a switchover point if there were goddess societies, and we need to prove that that happened. I personally have found lots of the arguments for the existence of goddess societies to be quite clear and quite convincing, but the debate goes on. So that's a major assumption. I'm also assuming that a society perceives the deity in its own image. So, as Chris put it, that if we're a society of men and women, we don't see God as a dog. Now, there are societies that do think of the deity as a tree, as cows, as other things. I'll be focusing only on ones that are gender specific. Power is the ability to do, act, or produce. Power is not the same thing as authority, though it can be. I've been using the word God throughout this explanation as if it denotes a male image, and goddess as it denotes a female image. In Christianity, God is, especially at this stage, termed generic, but it's with a capital G. I will probably, in speaking, switch in and out of that phase, but I'll try to be specific if whether I'm talking about a male image, a female image, or a generic or general image. Fourth, a goddess society need not have only goddesses. Lots of goddess societies had the goddess with a male god, or many. I mean, most people are familiar with Greek myths where they have many gods and many goddesses. By my definition, a goddess society need only have a goddess as a main deity. Let's get started. I looked at both fiction and actual history. Started out with fiction, found it very interesting, and decided I wanted to look at more about what historically we knew, or what we thought we knew. My first area is when women are the only power, which means they're the only living sentient creatures. You cannot have someone be the only power if there's another gender there. At all times, women had some power one way or another, just as at all times. Basically, it's a matter of influence. If you're there, you're going to affect things, and that's power. I looked at the book Herland by Charlotte Perkin Gilman. I'd recommend it to people. It's a book on a woman's utopia, and it was literally the first utopia that I'd ever read about that I thought actually might be able to work in terms of how the society was set up. Admittedly, the problem is they had virgin birth. You had to have only women for her to get her society to work as she perceived it. And not a utopia that I think is ever going to happen, but it sounds nice, at least to me. that qualified there, yes. When you have only one image for the deity, there's no problem. There are only females here. If they're going to choose, put the deity in its image, which is one of my assumptions, the deity has to be female. In the book, they perceived the goddess as an aspect of motherhood, like themselves, but extended beyond human limits. It was literally what they were, but more. There wasn't any true mystery about what the goddess was. She was there, she was like them, she was a pervading power that had the characteristics they did, but to an extent that they could not have. That was the only image they had. They couldn't choose another one, and it was that straightforward. Then you get into the more complicated. You have two genders. You have a male, female, which is chosen as the image. Matriarchal societies is a society in which women are the power, just as men were the power for so long and to a large extent continue today. The definition is that a society in which women, quote, hold a public authority in major areas of group life. Whether or not, yes?
I just want to know, in matriarchal societies, where has that occurred? Has it occurred only in primitive societies?
There's in fact very little evidence that matriarchal societies ever existed. They're even more in doubt than whether goddess societies ever existed. The opposite, unlike goddess societies where they have convincing arguments for why there'd be a goddess, there are fewer convincing arguments for why we would have started up a matriarchal society and then switched over to a patriarchal one. It's also harder to prove with ancient societies whether it would be matriarchal. More primitive societies tend to have more of a balance just because the emphasis is put on things that women have, areas that women have power in. Women are literally in charge of breadwinning because they're the ones that are going out getting all the ingredients, bringing them home, baking the bread. They're doing all the phases of it. Men are doing most of the time spending hunting for food. It was more of a balance, probably, not matriarchal and primitive societies. It is possible that matriarchal societies existed. I don't think that many did. It's definitely not a prevalent thing. Now, to start off on matriarchal societies with the statement that I truly do believe that would if situation were reversed and we had had for the last 200 years a matriarchal instead of a patriarchal society, we would have had a goddess and be going through the same thing with trying to switch over from she to he. Lots of arguments are being made mainly by women feminists today that everything would be better if we were in a goddess matriarchal society because women by their nature or whatever are more open to these things. There is some of that in terms of physical freedoms of the body that I believe might be there. But for the most part, if things were reversed, they truly would be reversed. Now that's a personal opinion. I don't have the evidence to back it up. My main source for matriarchal societies, again, because there's no evidence that ones ever exist, was again fiction. A book that I don't nearly recommend as highly, but is by a good author, Marion Zimmer Bradley's The Ruins of Isis, in which women control a world called Isis, and they believe in a goddess. And the reason they believe in a goddess is that the deities that have been speaking to them will only speak to women. In this particular one, of course, the goddess turns out not to really be goddesses, but in a more advanced life, it's science fiction. And the reason they only speak to women is that the first person that they spoke to when they landed were women, and the women were escaping from a patriarchal, very hierarchical society, and truly believed that the men were with them weren't worth talking to. And these advanced beings agreed with them. But this incredible society set up all around the idea that women were better, men were physically, mentally inferior. Women led everything. Men, in fact, did physical labor. They had sporting games to get out all that competitive energy. And in the book, they're going through a men's movement, fairly similar to the concept that we go through here today. Of course, since it's science fiction, you have to have these other beings help you along so that things look like they're going to turn out all right in a fairly short time span. But in a matriarchal society, women are the power, and their deity is a goddess. It makes perfectly good sense that if women are the power in the world, if they're controlling business, if they're controlling the home, their control of the money, they're the head of everything, that a deity who is, of course, over everybody is also female. Just as the dominant species was man, so you have a male image of the god for the most part. Now, problem comes in with my topic that this makes perfectly good sense. You've got this nice balance between, well, if the men are in power, you've got a male deity, and if women are in power, you've got a female one. Why is there any issue on goddess societies if we don't think they're ever matriarchal societies? My thesis is that women only need be a power. A significant one, they have to have, as I had said earlier, women never completely dropped out of power. They just have to be a significant one for the deity to be a goddess. As I had said earlier, the main power that women have that men don't is the power to give birth. This led to incredible power for women. At home and, in fact, in the other spheres. A woman's power to give birth was equated directly with the goddess's power to give life, all life, creation. Women were probably considered the only source of life, as I had mentioned. There's a 9-month delay here between the men's role and the giving birth, and it's highly likely, and in fact there are still societies, I believe in Australia, who don't understand the male's role, and women's status is definitely higher in those societies. Women are the only life givers. The deity who is the giver of all life is female. At the beginning, it was probably as simple as that. It wasn't women higher than men or men higher than women. It was just that the giver of life was female. For example, the goddess Nammu of Mesopotamia was literally claimed to have given birth to heaven and earth. It's a common image. Now the main way that this developed into a goddess society is probably that the first religion was probably ancestor worship. That is a common form of worship, and makes sense as the first one. Women are the only givers of life, thus things are traced through the woman's line and matrilineally. And thus the first or primal ancestor is female. Societies started worshiping this primal ancestor, which gradually grew into a goddess. For example, there is very strong evidence that some of the clans of the Upper Paleolithic societies were ancestor worshippers who literally revered a divine ancestress. This theme is, again, as my focus was originally, in fiction. Many people have read Clan of the Cave Bear by Jane Hollis. Anybody else read that? Well, in the series, the male role is not understood. Ayla, the main character, discovers it, and she tells people, but no one will believe her. They believe instead that the goddess takes the spirits of a male and a woman and mixes them up and puts them inside the woman. But in that one, John Gillar, the main male character in it, makes this claim about women. Women are her blessed. She made them in her likeness to create life as she created all life. He says women are her blessed, which gives women incredible power outside of just the power they were given by their means of giving birth. Women began to be revered by men because they were giving birth. They were the child givers, the life givers. But women being her blessed can extend outside of that. Women probably had control of their own bodies, were probably sexually free. There wasn't any connection for needing to keep women contained, because that originally started because for men to be able to trace their line, their woman can't be having any other men. It's that simple. So that the whole idea of marriage and containing and owning your mate was probably a concept started to be able to guarantee that the child of your wife was your child. One possibility that women feminists today like to claim is that women in ancient times knew natural ways to cause miscarriages, natural ways to prevent birth. There's no evidence of this, but it's a nice argument. But if it was true, that was another form of power. If it was not true, it was still the whole idea that women had control of their own bodies, which to a woman is incredible power and allows lots of other things. Immediately following birth, there's motherhood. And in ancient times, this was a lot more influential than it is today. Children were often breastfed for years. The Iroquois breastfed for 3 or 4 years. We know that for a fact, and chances are they did it equally long in ancient societies. It was a way of protecting the child. Food was scarce and not necessarily very nutritious. Children would live longer if they were breastfed longer. So the first thing is that women's body is the source of your first food, milk. And just as the earth is the source of food, we still have the concept today. We call it Mother Earth. The goddess is often literally equated with being the earth, not being the ruler of the earth, but actually physically being it. So the earth is her body. So women as mothers were the first providers of food, the first providers of comfort, of caring, of the necessities of life, and they could be turned to for these things. An infant was completely dependent on their mother, just as humans perceived themselves as being completely dependent on this deity. There are strong bonds, we call them mother-child bonds, that they like to think that there was direct bonds between the deity and them. And these bonds seem to be stronger between a mother and child than between the father and the child, mainly because the father was often away, hunting, war, other things that kept them away from home. Basically, the women were probably in the home taking care of the children and doing all the necessities of life until the male children were old enough to go off and learn how to hunt and do things with the adult males. Unfortunately, just as women were given credit as being the givers of life, they were also credited with being the takers of life. Children were often the first to die. Most children did not live to adulthood, so women were around death a lot. Women were also the healers with the herbs and were thusly around death. Several books that I came across believe that women probably, just as we have today, have herbs and medicines to give sleep and rest, absence of pain. Women were often in charge of preparing the body for burial. So just as the goddess gave life, she took life, and just as women gave life, they were there when life was taken. Women's power, however, was not just related to birth, though that does seem to be the primary connection. They were also probably the first source of many inventions. Children's needs probably led them to gathering and storing food. Anybody who's seen 2001 knows the scene where the apes pick up the bones and start smashing things, and chances are the first tools were not weapons. Instead, they were probably tools to gather and store food. There were probably lots of animals, and there wasn't any stage in that seems to lead directly into suddenly needing tools for hunting. Whereas a mother with lots of children, the mother of invention, we still say it today, that there's that need there for something. And women probably, if you go with that line of reasoning, were the first source of tools. Agriculture as well was probably a women's invention. There is evidence that agriculture first grew up around goddess shrines. Many goddesses are equated with being the givers of agriculture, which most historians connect with the thought that probably women were the source of agriculture, and thus female deity. Again, it was just plain necessity. With children, you can't travel around very often. It's easier to stay in one place. And to do that for very long requires planting. Then there are the traditional women's areas of influence, which probably lasted from the very beginning, which are areas of pottery, spinning, weaving, caring for the hearth, the fire, with cooking. All that kind of thing was probably started by women. Pottery, again, for storage, weaving, all these things that were so basic to life at early development and are still. There's nothing more basic than clothing. But we've gotten away from that because there's the in-between step of needing money. You don't go out and make clothes if you need them. Someone goes out and makes money and you go buy clothes already made. Another main invention that they cannot necessarily place on women, but is definitely connected with goddesses and probably thus with women, was the invention of written language. One of the earliest written texts ever found was found in the temple of the Queen of Heaven of Uruk of Sumer, and I probably pronounced that terribly. It's dated just before 3000 BC and was used by priestesses to record temple business accounts. It wasn't elaborate, it was just plain old business. Goddesses, again, are connected with the invention of writing, the Sumerian goddess Nibida, and the Indian mythology has goddess Sarasvati as the original inventors of the written language. This is not because they were only having a goddess. Lots of these societies had both male and female goddesses. And the goddess was chosen for those particular inventions. The goddesses are usually accredited with the gifts of civilization. That the myth attributing our major physical and spiritual inventions to a female deity may thus reflect on the actual invention by women. Probably grew out in part from their other powers, men and women sharing power, women actually leading. Lots of the records, like the list of kings, or the king list, which is a document that lists the dynasties of major cities in Mesopotamia, identifies dynasties by the queens, even though the histories talk about the kings. So written histories have the men doing everything, but the tablets of the time date the dynasty by the queens. So obviously they had some power, some influence. Again, the matrilineal descent. The king was originally the husband of the queen, the son, the uncle. Some connection with the queen that was direct influence. It had to go through the woman's line, so the women thusly had some form of power. Lots of societies allowed women to inherit money, and in fact some to interact in business, and as a result women could in fact affect political power there. I'll skim over this, where it's basically a sharing of power of most of those areas, that women were not held out of power, women did not hold men out of power. Both were there, both were influential. And with a goddess already established because of other means, there wasn't any reason to switch over, that women had power on earth and thus could have power in heaven, though the number of male deities was increasing and often the goddess power was waning. Area that I think might interest some people some more is Mary. If you think about what Mary symbolizes, there's no scriptural evidence, no scriptural reason for Mary to have been elevated to the level she's been elevated to. She was probably leaped upon by women as a foundation, something to look to. Some woman who wasn't negatively portrayed. They couldn't say that Mary, mother of Jesus, was a bad figure. And so women hooked on to that. In the second century, there were in fact groups of women. Some men would get together and they would worship God with female images, with Mary, with women leading services. They were banned as kicked out of the church. They couldn't have anything to do with it and very quickly disintegrated. But again, in the 12th and 13th centuries of old Europe, Mary reappeared with great force. There was a religious reawakening, just in general, both men and women. And the group that was hardest to contain was the women. They seized upon Mary and elevated her almost to the point where Mary almost displaced the Trinity. She became so important. In order to deal with this huge mass of women who were calling upon this, the church integrated Mary into their religion. Christianity is not nearly as long-reaching to the past as we seem to think in many ways. It was a change because of political reasons of the day. Women and men were breaking away from the church, and this was a way to keep them there. Also, Jesus gave power to women. He credited women with power, and he literally gave it to them. Mary is still hard to explain how a woman of such reverence could exist through time as this figurehead, as this replacement for the goddess, even when women's power was so low, when their status was so low. But she's there probably because women never dropped out of society completely. They were always there. Influence on husbands, influence on home life, small influences outside of the home. And then today, with the women's movement, the great women's movement of the women's decade, which is the 70s, women are coming back into power. Hopefully things are balancing out, you never know. And we've moved back, or we're moving to, depending on how you look at it, female images for God. Christianity and the church, men and women have been doing a lot to change what we call God. We've been changing the Trinity from Father, Son, and Holy Ghost to other things. You switch from he to she in texts. We spent a month looking at women in the Bible, looking at God as not a male figure, but as a God figure that has been made male because of the patriarchal society. Women need only be a power in a society for the deity to be considered a goddess. So one of the lines I came across quite often in study was that nothing ever wanes but to wax again, so beware. This was a message from a father to a son, probably the first son in this line to inherit, as opposed to the queen's line. And he meant it as a warning to beware of women and be cautious in how you treat them, because at some point they're probably going to come back into power. I too bring it up as a warning, but not because of worrying about what's going to happen to women, but what's going to happen to everybody. If waxing again means that we switch over from God to a goddess, we've not made it. We need that just about as much as we need to stay with just a male god. So, a balance is something that I believe needs to be looked for, and is something that needs to be worked for. Berlin.
Does any of those societies that you study, do any of them push for a balance? I mean, what do their societies that push for a balance?
Mainly, not that we have histories of. Most of what I'm talking about is things pieced together from either ancient texts where we're not sure whether we're interpreting things correctly, or more modern ones that never had the chance, because we tended to wipe out all the modern societies fairly quickly that were in these circumstances. there were societies that had a better balance, but it wasn't what we would consider a balance, a Christian balance. They usually, what it was, is that there was both a goddess and a god, separate entities, usually man and wife, though it meant differently then. That was the main switch over from a goddess to a god, was that first there's a goddess with her consort. The male gradually got stronger and stronger until the goddess was subjugated, just as the wife was subjugated. There was more equality in power than lots of recent, or up until very recent history, with both men and women in power, but not what we would consider a balance, and we don't have evidence of them working toward a balance where we're working toward a deity as opposed to a god or a goddess.
In most of those societies that are balanced, at least from what I know, which is like a lot, they're band level societies, gathering and hunting societies, what we think of as African tribes and stuff. And it seems like the further you move into agricultural and then industrial societies, the more out of balance things get.
Yeah. When agriculture was first set up, women were probably the inventors and probably controlled the crop. Gradually, though, as society set up and more people moved into an area, you weren't just fixing growing crop for your own family, for your family and the family nearby, but for lots of people, and it quickly moved into men doing that, not a woman doing that as part of her preparation of food. And you move more and more into society and move farther and farther away from women's power.
I find that kind of an interesting remark. I recall reading at one time there's a researcher, I believe in Virginia, who has done some studies of the creation text, the story of the Garden of Eden, in which Eve is tempted to take the fruit she eats and then gives some to Adam. As a result of his research, he's come to the conclusion that that entire story of being kicked out of the garden is actually a condensed form handed down through many generations of the transition from hunter-gatherer societies to agriculture. So I find that an interesting remark, that it's the women that started the agriculture.
Yeah. Well,
I think your statistic, your thoughts about poverty as it relates to the goddess might be interesting
here. This is basically my own conclusion. I haven't found it with anything with proof. I've gone back and looked, hoping to find something when Chris expressed interest in what I had put down as ideas. In upper societies, men and women, upper levels of economic balance, men and women were separated for the most part, fairly similarly in many ways to how we separated people in dormitories. You had a woman's dorm and a men's dorm, separate bathrooms, that men and women didn't, in the upper levels, intermingle very much, except in very formal, very planned, structured settings, or in coupled settings. At lower levels, mainly poverty, the poor level, men and women didn't have the freedom to do that. You were in a small hut, men, women together, children. Men worked alongside women. And the more I looked at things, the more I realized that the goddess image, not the hierarchical god of hung on longer with the lower class, that basically the way that switched over the poorer classes was to take over the goddess pagan ceremonies and integrate them into god ceremonies, because they were still observing them, that the church would be telling them, no, you know, you're not supposed to go out this night, there's nothing special about this night, and the poor would still be out doing their pagan worship, and the church basically took over most of those rituals to integrate things in. But the goddess hung on longest with the lowest classes, where men and women were by necessity forced to work together, forced to mingle, didn't have the luxury of being separated. So I have not found anyone else, at least in the research I have, that have put those two things together in a concrete thing, but from my research I found that to be true. You were nodding. So.
Do you know when the cult of Mary developed and became really strong?
Early in the 12th century, it got its first real punch. And the 12th and 13th centuries were the height of it, that it held on. And then in the 15th, the church was figuring out ways to get rid of it, to suppress it. I don't have any more specific dates on when that all happened. But it was that time period that 12th and 13th, things were moving along. They were picking up followers outside the established church. Things were being set up outside the established church, and there were too many of them. Basically, if there are a few of them, we just suppress them. There were so many of them that they changed their policy. But I don't have anything more specific on that time period.
Do you know anything about whether or not the Mary cult included any more kind of sexuality? You know,
do I know?
I can't remember whether it's all real kind of sexless Mary is this pure thing. I'm curious about how it fits in with the concept of chivalry.
Yeah. I don't know how that worked.
The goddess religions have a lot to do with sexuality,
incredible amount. That sexual freedom and being sexually active is a way to sort of the gift to the goddess is to be doing that. It's the main part of the ritual. They consider getting that they get power from it. Witchcraft is coming back now with witch covens and everything, and that's the same thing that in the olden days, though it's less, even now they definitely have sexual tension in them. In the old days, right in the middle of a worship service, was quite likely to have the priestess, who is representative of the goddess, and the male next to her representing the god, to literally have sex up on in the middle of the worship. But I don't know how those Mary cults did sexuality. I do know that it was a lot of women breaking away from this traditional role of being suppressed, of being told that because they were women, they were the bringers of evil, the people who got us all kicked out of the Garden of Eden. So I suspect that it was sexually freeing. I do not know whether, in fact, I suspect that it wasn't at least a major part of the cults. But no, I don't know.
Sharon, do you know when Catholicism
adopted the tradition of saying the rosary and having Mary be the intercessor for...
I believe that was, I don't know specifically, I believe it began in the 14th century. It was the beginning of their integrating all this back into their...
So before that, it wasn't such a huge deal?
No, it was, up until the 12th century, it probably wasn't a big deal at all.
Mm-hmm.
That it really was, it was a reaction to the masses. They had to change their way of looking at Mary because so many people wanted it and they were at risk of losing everyone if they didn't. But I don't know for sure. That's just a guess on what I know about when Mary became a big influence. Yeah?
It seems like to me now to be Christian is to be sexless to a certain extent. But it doesn't only exist in Christianity. It kind of exists across the board in other mainline, well not mainline, but other religions. So did all this kind of happen at once? I mean, while it was going on in, say, Christianity, was it also going on in with Muslims and right? So, I mean, was this kind of all happening at once?
I honestly don't know. I don't know. I haven't looked at Muslim and other traditions very much. That I suspect that it would be at a similar time, just because if the same things, if we're right about what caused the change over to things, that I'd suspect that kind of thing would be happening at fairly similar times, probably not at the exact same time where it started across the board, but at the similar time, that the same influences would be there that switched the Christianity kind of tradition over, would be switching other things over, but I don't know that for sure.
What happened to, how was homosexuality viewed during goddess?
That's a main area of personal bias that, depending on who you look at, I mean, there's not a lot of evidence for proving one way or the other which way a society feels about something like that. Lots of the fiction that I have seems to assume that they would look positively on that, just as they don't, that as they looked positively, or at least not negatively, like it was part of life on sex in general, that it was a means of worship, and if you wanted to be worshiping with someone of your own sex, just as it was fine to be doing with brothers and sisters, that didn't matter. Hope, it was basically an idea of sexual freedom. So I suspect that at least at voice level, they that was an all right form of worship. I don't know how they actually felt about that or whether that assumption is correct at all. But it wasn't the whole idea of sexual freedom and sexuality as being a form of worship. And I know that lots of what we consider taboo now wasn't. So I suspect that it was freer. Lots of what I looked at I found very interesting because homosexuality was very open and accepted, mainly because I was looking at the women. Obviously, that was my focus of my paper, that women would have very close friends who they would get sexually active with. The nice twist that, if anybody, people have read Mists of Avalon, the twist that's thrown into that one is, in fact, that Lancelot's real reason for loving Guinevere is because he's in love with Arthur. And you get into a nice, very nice compact scene of all three of them in bed, and the connotations are very unclear on whether, on who's touching who. In the ruins of Isis, you have the women getting stimulated by the men and then turning to the women who are sitting next to them and going off with the women. The society felt very negatively toward anyone who wanted to life bond with a male. That it was, you life bonded with another female because you had so much in common. Men were for sex to have children, and men were to have sex every, you know, once or twice a year just for the pleasure of doing that. But you connected with and you did casual sex. You were partnered with another female. But that's all fictional interpretations. That's how the author wants to look at it, or how the author interprets the society. Yeah, Mark?
From what I know, there was kind of a common culture at the time that we talked about the goddess. And I know you've illustrated some of the kind of the common bonds between some of the goddess cultures. Something that comes to mind too is the kind of common name for a variety of goddesses that were in that area, Astarte, Astoreth, to what we call Isis and Aphrodite, all sharing that kind of common linguistic name. I'm wondering if there are some of those characteristics have carried over into our own time or into perhaps the last 4 or 5 centuries.
What do you mean that? I mean,
some of the qualities you discussed about the goddess societies. I mentioned the sexual freedom. You mentioned what we would term the paganism. Just those kind of aspects. If that's something that has carried over, perhaps subculturally.
Yes, actually, definitely. It's carried over enough that not only do we still know about it at different time periods, it's reappeared and reemerged, briefly because of imbalance in male-female relations. Modern times, lots of this stuff is resurfacing. As I'd mentioned, lots of the pagan things are literally still there in almost exact form that they were originally established, just taken over by what we'd consider modern culture. And lots, at the time period when we were switching over to Christianity, people would literally find people doing pagan worship and say, no, you're not really worshiping this, you're worshiping this. They'd go on with the exact same ceremony, calling it by a different name. The story of St. Patrick, with the whole, I'll get back to the whole issue of the snakes, which is very interesting, but there's a story of him literally going to an island and finding the natives worshipping the mother creator, the creator of life, the mother of God, because they in fact had this double thing, which is in fact a commonistic of Mary, which fits Mary in with the goddess image. And he literally said to them, this isn't the mother creatress, this is Mary, the virgin mother. And the story has him literally tell them that, them going, oh, okay, going on with their ceremony and him walking off because now everything's okay, because they're now worshiping the right God. And literally all it is they've now been told that, no, you're not worshiping the goddess, you're worshiping Mary. And they don't know what, they probably didn't know what that means, if the story has any basis in fact. And it's a fairly common theme that we just sort of took things over. Not that we changed everything, but we took them over. Lots of Christianity is deliberately designed to suppress the goddess. That some things we didn't, the ones I just came mentioned were the snakes. In goddesses societies, and even if you don't accept goddess societies as fact, in ancient times the snake was revered. The snake was the source of wisdom as something positive. It was a revered creature that, if you still look at it, the health sign has two snakes, which is a direct connection back with that idea. I don't remember the name of it now. It was a deliberate act to be choosing the snake as something to be put down. That's again interpretation of how you interpret the Bible. But it seems fairly clear from history that the way to get rid of goddesses society was to take something that they revered and make it something evil. Women, the snake. St. Patrick is very famous for driving the snakes off the island, which was, it's rejoicing kind of image until you realize that the snakes were the stakes of wisdom, of help, as something not to be worshipped to, but to be looked up to be revered. There's quite a bit of that kind of thing that, as you'd talked about, that they'd sort of, the condensed version of women bringing agricultural, that we've made something that was positive or was a part of that worship into something that's negative, so that there's a reason to turn away from that form of worship.